pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. Ecclesiastes, you're all there. Again, if you ever want to get to Ecclesiastes quickly, it's super simple. If you take your Bible and you open it up about halfway, you'll probably end up somewhere in the book of Psalms. It's usually where you go. And then you just keep going. We're in the wisdom literature, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. And so that's where we're at. I'm going to start this off by question. And I'm curious what your answer. And so all of you are going to have to answer this question. Okay? We're just going to say everyone does. This is a deep question. What is the purpose of life? Okay, so, immediately some of you are like, I already know the answer. This is great. This is one of those questions that we often go through. Usually it happens during college. I don't know why college. It's the time when you're really discovering who you are. It's the time where you are trying to figure out who you are. You know, you are identified in a family, but then you go off and you start learning more. And you eventually start thinking of things like, what am I going to do after college? Am I going to have a job? What is that job going to entail? And then you start getting really depressed because you're like, wait, I have to figure this all out. And I've got to do this now for the rest of my life. And you start thinking to yourself, is there anything different in life, and why am I even here, and what is the purpose and meaning? So, all right, so I heard, I don't know who yelled it out. What is the purpose of life? Okay, so Vince says, worship God. That's a great, good Christian answer. I love it. Anyone else? Say that again? To serve God. Okay, good. And serve his people. Serve God and serve his people. I like that. Joshua?
It's less of a total meaning of life, but I have a personal mantra that I follow.
You have a personal mantra you follow. Okay, go for it.
Love God, love people, love yourself. Hope everyone can do the same.
Love God, love people, love yourself, and hope that everyone else does the same. Yeah, all right. You need to get that as a tattoo on your back. That would be really... No, don't do that. good. Anyone else? Eric, Catherine?
Know God and make him known more.
Know God and make him known more. All right. Anyone else? These are some really good answers. And as you notice, here inside a Christian church, it all revolves around God, right? God is the reason why we have purpose in life. God makes life worth living. Is there a purpose in life outside of God? Without God, I mean, what would be the meaning? Let's go ahead and take God out of the equation. Let's say you are someone who does not believe in God. You do not believe in Jesus. What do you think then would be the purpose of life? To accumulate, yeah, so amass stuff, and maybe it's about money, sure. Anyone else? Pleasure. You know, hey, let's might as well have a little bit of fun. Because if there is no other meaning or purpose in life, yeah?
To survive.
To survive. I mean, without God, really, all you're doing is surviving. Yeah. It's kind of depressing, isn't it? Recently, I was turned on to a Netflix series. Don't watch it. Someone else told me to watch it, but I went ahead and watched it, and it was a religious horror genre, which is really crazy because, you know, Heather's like, that's a no-go for me. But it's very interesting. It's called Midnight Mass. And it's really weird and creepy, but it was good. I liked it. There was one part, though, where there was this religious woman and this atheist man, and they were talking about what happens after you die. And the religious woman talks about how you know, after you died. She had just had a loss of a child in utero, and so she was mourning that loss, and she was talking about how she's going to see this child again and looking forward to being in the presence of God and in the presence of others that have gone before her. But for the guy who is an atheist, he goes, well, essentially at the end of life, I'm going to stop breathing, and then my mind is going to flood with chemicals that my body is producing that are going to fire, and I will be in this euphoric, dreamlike state, and I will experience pleasure, but then ultimately, I will cease to exist. And as I was listening to that, I felt sad because he was struggling with it. What's the purpose of life then? For him, the purpose of life was to survive and then no longer exist. This is what we're going to be talking about as we go through the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is one of those challenging books that try to get you to see that life has purpose and meaning, but only if it is anchored in God. In fact, as we go through this, I'm actually going to give you the answer at the very beginning, and it will be a constant refrain. The person who writes Ecclesiastes goes through it, and then finally in chapter 12, he says, well, now here is the conclusion that I have arrived at. So it's kind of nice to know that. So if you want to see that, you should turn there now. So flip forward to Ecclesiastes 12. It's like getting the answer at the beginning. And I'm going to verses 13 and 14. These are the last two verses of Ecclesiastes. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. So he spends all these chapters laying out his argument, and some of them are pretty hard to, like, accept. But he says, after all of this, I've got this conclusion. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. So that's the conclusion. Fear God and keep his commands. So serve God, worship God, love others would be under his commands, right? And make him known, which is another one of God's commands. So that is essentially what the book of Ecclesiastes is all about. If you want to boil everything down, how should we live? What is the purpose of life? It is to serve God, to fear God and keep his commands. So let's see how he gets there. So first we're going to talk a little bit about Ecclesiastes. Who is the author? There's a lot of debate on this. I believe that the author is actually not Solomon. Now, a lot of people will believe that Solomon is the actual author, and there's definitely some good evidence that shows that, especially the way he identifies at the very beginning of the chapter. We're going to read this, and you'll be like, that sounds a lot like Solomon to me. And I think that in many ways, what the person is trying to do is they're acting in the stead of Solomon. It would be very similar if I talk about how I know people who are like this or like that, and I can have a representative. Solomon is a great representative because Solomon had everything. Solomon was, in fact, the wealthiest person at the time. But the guy didn't just have wealth. The guy had something else. He had something that he actually prayed for. And there was a time that it was like, what do you want? God says, and I will give it to you. And do you remember what Solomon asked for? Wisdom. A what? A phone? Oh. and God was like, well, okay, you asked for wisdom, but you didn't ask for fame or power or treasures. But because you asked for women, I'm going to, women. Because you asked for wisdom, I'm going to give you all these other things. Now let's talk about the women. Because how many women did Solomon have?
Too many.
Too many is the correct answer. He had, according to scripture, 700 wives. Well, we'll get to the concubines in a moment. Let's just talk about the wives first. 700 wives. Can you hear the discussion?
That's not wisdom.
That's not wisdom. It's not smart. Because you got to imagine, if you were a woman, you'd be like, Solomon, how come you never text me? I mean, I need a little more FaceTime with you. Imagine 700 wives. That means that if you spent one day with one wife, you would see the women how often? Once every 2 years. And the women are like, actually, that's about sounds good to me. Yeah. No, hopefully not. Hopefully you want to see your husband a little bit more often than just once every 2 years. Okay, so now let's get into the concubines. And a concubine is, it would be a side chick. So this is just people on the side. They have no standing in terms of inheritance and things like that. They're just, and how many concubines did he have?
Too many.
He had 300 concubines. Well, that's going to be a problem because that now bumps you. If you're a wife, you're not going to see your guy once every 2 years. You're now bumped to once every 3 years. So Solomon has a lot of women. Now, you could then say that he knows probably a little thing about pleasure when it comes to sexuality. Would you say that he probably was one of the most sexually prolific people in the Bible? You would have to think so. That would be the case. He also has a lot of wisdom. Again, wisdom doesn't always carry over into our everyday life, right? How many of you have ever done something really dumb, and afterwards someone asks you, why did you do this? And you go, I don't know. I was dumb. So he's got wisdom. He's got pleasures. And also, how much wealth does Solomon have? He's got everything. The palaces, the houses, the money would be insane. And we're going to talk about that because that's really the first two chapters is all about how this writer, who I really don't think it is Solomon. I mean, there is definitely, it could be, but I don't think it is based on other evidence in the book. But he's writing as if he was. He's trying to help us understand, what if you had all the money in the world? What if you had all the sexual pleasures of the world? What if you had all the wisdom and knowledge of the world? What if you had everything? How happy would you be? And I think there's also a great case, especially when you think of someone like Solomon, who clearly, during that time in his life, was not living according to God's standard, right? Some people would even wonder, is Solomon in any relationship with God? And if that's the case, then this has been said as maybe Solomon's treatise on coming back to faith because he finally figures stuff out. So the person who writes this, they actually identify themselves in verse 1. Ecclesiastes 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. And so some people are like, well, who's the son of David? Well, it's Solomon, and Solomon was king in Jerusalem. And so the person writing this is definitely standing in that stead, and I think it's quite all right. But what everyone has come to is they just simply call him the teacher or the preacher. The fancy Hebrew word is the koaleth. So if I was going to translate the koaleth into Latin, it would be the Ecclesiastes. That's where we get the name of the book. This would be either a preacher, teacher, someone like me, someone who gathers a group of people to teach. Or it could be someone within the assembly themselves. You are an Ecclesiastes. In fact, you are actually part of a global ecclesia, which would be the word for church. You are part of that. And so that's why, you know, is this someone who is leading or someone within? But I think this would be important. I think that if someone came to me and they said, I had all the money in the world, I had all the power and the fame in the world, I had every sexual pleasure given to me, and now I'm going to tell you how valuable that is. Would that be a person you'd want to listen to? I think so. I would like to know a little bit more. So let's find out what he has come to conclude. Verse 2. Meaningless, meaningless, says the Koheleth, the teacher, the preacher, the Ecclesiastes. Utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. So there you go. Welcome to church. Happy New Year. Everything's meaningless. Have a great day. Jesus loves you. Bye-bye. No. Why is this so important to understand? You have to start with the knowledge of how things are in life. And I think this is one of the reasons why young adults struggle with life, is because you've gone to school and you've gone through grade 12 maybe, and then you're going through college, and then you're looking out and you're like, why am I doing all this? What's the purpose? You mean, I'm going to wake up, go to class, study, eat some food, hang out with friends, go to bed, and then do the same thing tomorrow. This also happens to young men and women who have their first child. The first child comes, and it seems like it's a never-ending cycle of poop, clean, feed, repeat. That's pretty much life. Kid poops, kid eats, clean the kid, put the kid down for a nap, and do that over and over and over. And then we also struggle with this maybe sometimes through midlife. The midlife crisis hits. And this is when guys often go, why am I doing this? I wake up in the morning, I eat my breakfast, I go to work, I work 8 to 10 hours, I come home, I'm exhausted, I have dinner, I watch a little bit of TV, I go to bed, and then what do you do the next day? The exact same thing. Which is why vacations are great, right? We pine for vacations. It gets us out of our rut. It gets us so that we can experience something different. But then what happens after vacation? Yeah, welcome back to life. I think this is the reason why people struggle with adulting. How often I've heard people talk about the challenges of what it means to actually live in this world. You have to do things like file your taxes. Guess how often you have to file your taxes? Once a year. Guess how long you have to do it until? Till you die. That's it. Isn't that great? You have to do it, no matter what. How about bills? How often do bills show up? Once a month, usually. I mean, some are a little bit different, but once a month. Do they always show up? Yeah, they're always there. You're always using electricity. You're always using water. You're always watching Netflix. You got to pay those bills. How often? Every month. Is there ever a time that you don't have to pay them? Okay, maybe every now and then, but pretty much you have to do that all the time. Who here would like to not have to work for the rest of their life? That'd be great. But alas, can you? No. You have to. That's the way life is. And you wonder, is there any meaning? Meaningless, meaningless. Now, this word gets used a lot throughout. I believe it's 38 times, I believe this word meaningless shows up. What does the word meaningless actually mean? Well, it comes from the Greek word hevel or hevel, and it actually means breath, vapor, transient. What it's actually saying is everything is like trying to catch a cloud. Everything is kind of like trying to bottle up wind, which is what Heather was talking about, of trying to capture something, but you just can't quite do it. Just when you think you've got it, it slips through your fingers. Just when you think you have enough money, what happens? Your roof starts leaking. Your battery in your car dies, and $172 later from AutoZone, you have to pay it. I'm not speaking out of any experience here. Yes, that's what I had to do yesterday. Happy New Year to me. Just when you think, and then how about also relationships? You're like, okay, I'm in a good part of my relationship, but what are you thinking in the back of your head? Is it going to turn bad? Is this going to be, oh man, this isn't going to work. And you're trying to, and I also do the same thing for Christmas. I am always chasing after the perfect Christmas. Doesn't exist. It's meaningless. Everything is just a vapor. By the way, how long has the earth been in existence? We could have debates over, is it thousands of years, tens of thousands of years, hundred thousands of years, millions of years? Have you ever thought about how little time you spend on this earth? About how much time? Give you 80 so years, some more, some less, right? But soon you're just going to die, right? And are you going to be remembered? No, probably not. Isn't that wonderful? Everything is transitory. It's not really substantive. We want something more. It's also really interesting that the second person born in a normal fashion was actually named this. So Adam and Eve get together, and what do they have? They have their first kid, right? Cain. And she thought that this was the promise of God that was going to defeat Satan. Right? She's like, this is wonderful. And then she has a second kid, and she calls that kid Abel, which is from the same, you just called your kid meaningless. How would you like to be born, and you're like, hey, meaningless, come here. Yeah, this is terrible. Poor Abel. Meaningless. And then he goes on, because this is what we've all gone through. I love this because this is real life. Being a Christian does not mean you are now free from all of the problems of life. This does not mean that you have some sort of Pollyanna pie in the sky, everything is wonderful, my life is great, and nothing bad happens. That's just garbage. Christians have the most realistic view on life. And we can say, like this teacher, what does man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and it turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning to its course. I love this imagery in verse 7. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. Have you ever imagined that? Like, I often wonder, as things are flowing into the seas and the oceans, how does it keep doing that and it never changes? Well, okay, now we're a little bit more sophisticated. We understand water vapor and, you know, stuff evaporates and becomes clouds and then it rains again. But you think about it, how amazing that is. I remember the first time I saw a picture of Niagara Falls. And I'm like, that's a lot of water. Where does that water come from? Where is it going? That's what this person is saying. Life just keeps going. And why? What's the purpose? Verse 8, all things are wearisome more than one could say. Is anyone here weary of work? Is anyone here weary of school? You sometimes say, gosh, what? Why am I doing all this? The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. That's a pretty amazing thing. Who here has seen everything on the internet? No, thank God, no. Yeah, that would be a bad thing. But if you think about this world, you could spend your entire life just exploring the world, and would you see it all? Would you be able to meet everybody? No. You could spend your life doing that and you're still not going to get enough. It's still not satisfying. And I love it because he says, what has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. And then he gives this phrase again, there is nothing new under the sun. Isn't that true? Nothing new under the sun. Now, some of you are like, well, is that really accurate? I mean, at this time, the writer is writing. There's no such thing as the internet, right? And the internet is going to come later on. But let's face it, isn't the internet just another gathering of knowledge, just an attempt to, what about connect Facebook or Instagram? Oh, these are just ways of people trying to connect. We've been trying that in the past. Some of you are like, well, what about new inventions? I personally love new inventions. One of my favorite shows that I love to watch is Shark Tank. Do y'all watch Shark Tank? I love Shark Tank. I think it's great. So always these new inventions. And I'm gonna fill you in on something. I don't know if you know this. I actually invented something. I actually have a patent on something. Some of you don't believe me, and that's okay. I'll show it to you if you want. I invented a spatula holder. And now you're thinking to yourself, wait a second. Wait, haven't spatula holders been invented yet? Yes, but not this particular kind of spatula holder. And so I designed it. Joshua actually helped design it. And then I got someone else to do some CAD drawings. And then we actually built prototypes. And I actually have a prototype sitting on my barbecue grill as we speak. And then I applied for a patent and I got it. It's very cool. But it's not really new, is it? Someone else has already invented things like this. And we always think that maybe something new is good. And the writer's like, there is really nothing new. Everything's already been invented. And he goes on, verse 10, is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was already here long ago. It was here before our time. And then there is no remembrance of men of old. And even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. Can someone here tell me the name of your great-great-grandfather? Can you do it? George, you can do it?
His name is George.
His name is George. Dang it! Yeah. You got me on that one. Do you know yours?
Friedrich Conrad.
I thought he was great-great-great. I thought he was three greats. So who's your great-great-grandfather?
A Friedrich
of some way. Did someone else say that they knew? Yes?
Andreas.
Okay. So how about your great-great-great-great-grandmother? Do you know your great-great-great-great-grandmother? What was that? Wow. I'm impressed.
Sophie Book.
How about your great-great-great-great-great-grand-uncle? Have you ever stopped it? Because what is the one thing, young people, what is the one thing that you want in life? You want to make a difference. You won't. No one's going to remember you. I'm hoping, I don't know, maybe it'll be one day, maybe 4 or 5 generations from now, there'll be some kid, he's sitting in his lap of his dad. His dad, tell me the stories of my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Mark Manning. Tell me of, just again, his prowess in preaching and his impact in the global world. Yeah. No. Yeah. Tell me how we invented the spatula stand once again. Is anyone going to do that? You're going to die and no one's going to remember you. Isn't this wonderful news? Joshua, did you have a question or a comment?
I wanted to say something, but now I'm just depressed.
Now you're just depressed, yeah. You're supposed to be after this, because that's what happens in life. We say we want to make a difference, but we just don't know how to. We want to be remembered, and so we want to have maybe a memorial to us, or we want to have some sort of significance in this world, and we come to the book of Ecclesiastes, and he's like, nope. When it comes to being under the sun, nothing. This world does not care about you. This world does not like you. This world will forget you and everything about you. I'm so glad I came to church today. And then he goes on, and he talks about wisdom. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. Because sometimes people say, all we need to do is learn more, and life will be better, right? If we just have more knowledge, things will be better. Do you think that the world is better off now than it was thousands of years ago? Maybe in some things, but you know, like back in the 1913 or so, did you know that they had a global pandemic? Oh, crud, that's the same thing we have today. Never mind, okay. Do you know that back then they had people who had very little food? Okay, that doesn't work. Do you know that back then there was evil and people were doing evil things? Well, okay, that's the same. There's nothing new under the sun, is there? If knowledge was everything, if knowledge brought you peace and joy, then college campuses would be the happiest places on earth. And they're not, to ask a college student. They're like, I hate this. I hate my life. Maybe not. Maybe you enjoy a little bit of it. I personally love knowledge. I've gained knowledge, but I've also learned this. And also, as I've talked to people who have greater age than me, they all say the same thing. The more I know, the more I get depressed about how evil and horrible things are. I talked to one gentleman years ago, and I'm like, man, you've studied the Bible. You really kind of, you have a lot of life experience. You're like, you should be in a good place. And he's like, no, I just know how much evil I have in my life, and it's getting harder and harder. And I'm like, okay, that's really depressing. Wisdom is, and he's devoting himself to study, to explore by wisdom, all that is done, which has been laid on men. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And then he gives this proverb, what is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. Did they come up with a cure for the global pandemic back in the 1900s? I actually don't know. Did they? They didn't? People just died and then it was like, kind of faded out afterwards. Okay, so because how about polio, right? I remember hearing all about polio, and it was great because here is this horrible, nasty disease, and what did we do? We effectively, almost completely, got rid of it. So, with medical sciences, we're getting better and better, right? So that there are no more people who are sick, and there's no more people dying. What happens if someone cures cancer? That would be a good thing, right? Would that then make this world a perfect place to live in? There's still going to be more. There's still going to be things that are killing us. What happens if we're able to produce enough stuff so that the entire world could be fed? Will the entire world be fed? No, because there's still evil in this world. Every time we turn around, the more we know, and what is twisted cannot be straightened. The evil that is in this world cannot be straightened by living under the sun. I think this is one of the reasons why it's really amazing when you know what Christmas is all about and you know why Jesus came. I'm going to read to you from Luke chapter 3. So obviously Luke chapter 2 is the Christmas story, right? And then Luke chapter 3 is this wonderful thing where it talks about why Jesus came. And this is what it says. Luke 3, I'm going to read verses 4, 5, and 6. As it is written in the book of the words of Isaiah the prophet, a voice of one calling in the desert. Prepare the way for the Lord. Make straight paths for him. Every valley shall be filled in, every mountain and hill made low. The crooked roads will become straight. The rough ways smooth. And all mankind will see God's salvation. If you are trying to find meaning in this world without God, you will fail miserably. If you are trying to straighten your path in your own power, you will fail. But with God, the crooked becomes straight. The evil becomes righteous. And meaninglessness is now replaced by meaning. God is the one who does this. He's going to keep going. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. Isn't that right? Who here, after you become an adult, who here would like to go back to being a kid? I would love midday naps again. Do you remember as a kid you fought against nap time? Because you didn't want to miss anything, and you fought it, and your parents were like, please just go to sleep so that I could have a moment of peace and quiet. And now I would love a midday nap. I would love to know what it's like not to pay bills again. I would love to know what it was like not to pay taxes. I would love that. Again, it's a lot of times of how you see it. Years ago, something happened in our life, and it very much helped us understand what's going on. Heather and I and my dad and my sister, we were going to go to Oakland. And the reason we were going to Oakland was we were visiting my family up north, and I had to fly back down south because at that time it was just easier to fly home for a Sunday than to get a guest preacher, and there's just a lot of stuff that goes in. So I was going to fly out of Oakland, fly down, and then fly back up and regain. And so we thought that what would really be great is we're going to take an Amtrak, and we're going to take it down the Oakland line, and one of the places it stops is right near the Oakland airport. So we get on this Amtrak, and we're going down. Now, to try and put this in perspective, Heather and I we're younger, which is great, and how old are the kids?
Little.
They're little. Joshua's how old?
Like 3 or 4.
No, he had to be older than that because he's the one that said the thing at the end.
No, I think he was like 3 or 4.
He was like 3 or 4?
4 or 5.
I think it was 4 or 5. So we have these little kids, and you know, they're these three blonde-haired, blue-eyed. We have Bubba. He's running around being crazy. We have Jacob. We have Joshua and Heather. And then we've got my dad, who's a little bit older. And then we've got my sister, who is deaf. And we're going down to Oakland. So we get out, and all of a sudden we get to a spot, and they're like, you have to get off the Amtrak now because the rest of the line, there's some problems, so you have to get off here. And guess where it landed us? It landed us right at the Oakland Coliseum. Now, do you guys know anything about the Oakland Coliseum? Eric, I mean, as a Raiders fan, what is the neighborhood like around the Oakland Coliseum? It's a rough neighborhood. It is bad. I'm an Oakland Raiders fan, and I never visited the Coliseum because that's like crazy to go to. So we all get off on the Amtrak, and I'm like, you know what? I can get a taxi from here to the airport. It's really not that far. And so I said, we need to get you guys like on the reverse Amtrak, going back the other way. And so we waited, and we waited, and we waited. It started to rain. It was it was starting to get cold. And it's starting to get a bit later in the day, and we're starting to worry about, are we going to die? And then I had to leave to get on the airplane, and so I leave. My wife and three little kids, my father who's older and my sister who's deaf at downtown Oakland Coliseum. Standing in the rain. I hope you live. And I was very scared. And I thankfully found out that they did finally make their way out of there and they got home. But what was really interesting is what Joshua said that night when they finally got the trek. Now, the whole time, what is Heather thinking? We are going to die. We're going to be on the news. This is going to be bad. My kids are going to be sold into slavery. My father-in-law isn't going to be any help. He's an old man. My sister doesn't know what's going on because she's deaf and she can't understand some of these things that are going on. She's very savvy herself, though. But, like, this is not good. And we get home. Heather gets home. And Joshua looks at Heather and says, "That was fun. This was a great adventure. Can we do this again? I want to go back to those days when something that was life-threatening was actually somewhat fun." Yeah, yes, Joshua, do you have a comment?
I do not remember any of this.
Oh, I know you don't. Yeah, you were little, but you thought this was a great adventure. Sometimes I wish we could go back there because the older I get, the more grief I see. The older I get, the more commercials I see about dogs and cats being abused. And I usually have to quickly change the channel. I see commercials of starving children in parts of this world, and it saddens me to no end. I look at this world and I see the amount of sex trafficking that is going on. When I was a kid, I didn't even know what that was or what it meant. And the older I get, the more I see that this world is really messed up. And if you are trying to live your life without God, you have no meaning. You can study all you want. You can gain all the wisdom, all the knowledge, all the power, all the pleasures, and it will not make your life straight under the sun. Which means for us, what do we need to do? We need to look a little higher. We need to not look at this world to find meaning and purpose. The meaning and purpose we find is outside of us, and that is in God. Because the other option is just too painful. I continue to have conversations with those who wonder why we believe in God, and isn't believing in God just a crutch for life? And I think to myself, the alternative is just too painful to think, right? If there is no, you might say to yourself, well, we've got to love our parents. Maybe that's a good meaning of life. No, your parents are going to die one day. Maybe I should love a spouse. They're going to die one day. Well, how about loving kids? Noble, you should do it. You're going to die, and they're going to die, and then their descendants are going to die, and then everyone else is going to die. That is not where you find your purpose and meaning. You find your purpose and meaning in what God says. God takes our meaningless existence and says, I'm going to give you purpose. And the purpose is to love others, to care, to be giving and serving. Not because we think it's going to have some long-lasting impact in this world, but because it will have an eternal consequence. For those of you who are raising children and raising them to know who God is, do you realize you will have an eternal significance? That's crazy to think about. Yes, you want your kids to grow up, not be leeches on society, produce something, not be jerks. There's lots of great things that you want for your kids, but that all is meaningless unless I get to spend eternity with them. Same thing with grandkids or employers or next door neighbors. The meaning you have in life is because you can have an eternal significance. That's something not under the sun. We are kind to others, not because it'll make a difference in this world, but because we hope it makes an eternal difference. And that is what God has done for you. You may come to the conclusion that everything is meaningless, and you may despair over the things of this world because they are difficult. But we live our lives, and we love others, and we serve God because that